Davis steps under center. Gibson and McClendon behind him. Davis with motion by Richard. Will give the ball to McClendon. He leaps. Oh, he doesn't get in. He fumbled the football. Carolina holds. The game is over. And Carolina has won the game.
Finley to throw. Over the middle, intercepted. Wolfolk again. Wolfolk the other way. At the 30, the 40. Wolfolk to midfield. Miles Wolfolk with the pick. The heels on the doorstep of an enormous victory.
Left side of the line. Hood standing to Williams' right. Williams going to throw. One-on-one. Davis has it. Touchdown. Carolina wins. Carolina is the Coastal Division champion. Bernard fields it at the 26. Heading to the far side. Gio at the 35. Gio, he's at the 50. No, he's not. Yes, he is, Gio. He's going to take it for a touchdown. Are you kidding me?
Connor Barth for the possible win. Snap, spot, kick away, high enough, long enough. It's good! It's good! Carolina has won the game on a 42-yard field goal by freshman Connor Barth. Good gosh, dirty!
This is the Heel Tough Blog Podcast.
What's going on, guys? Welcome into another edition of the Heel Tough Blog Podcast. It's your host, Anthony Pagnotta, here with you guys, as always. And here on a Wednesday night, on the week of the Duke game, thought it'd be the perfect time to give you guys a little bit of a recap of the NFL Scouting Combine. Got a couple of notes when it comes to the Tar Heels on the 2025 recruiting trail that we want to get to as well. We'll get to those at the end, but also a tremendous interview with Justin Mello of the Draft Network. You guys are not going to want to miss that as he recaps the Combine, tells us a little bit about the stock of some of the guys for the Tar Heels in this draft class that were in Indy. So plenty of great stuff here tonight. Won't waste too much time sort of recapping what I thought, but I did want to give you some of my takeaways from what I saw in Indy of the four guys that were there. Now, of course, the guy that everybody really is talking about the most is Drake May. And, you know, it's some is good, some is bad. Today, I think this is the perfect day also to recap this because earlier today, Chris Sims went and put out his top quarterbacks for this draft. He has Drake May sixth. He lists him as a talented project. That's how he listed it. Look, I think that Chris Sims is way off on this. I've seen Drake May play for 2 years now, watched him, and there's some things that I get that people are concerned about, especially when you talk about the end of the last couple of seasons. But you look at the arm talent, you look at what he does off structure. You just talk about the commitment that the guy has. And I mean, you know, I feel like just watching him with some of the meetings that he had, some of the interviews that he was doing out there in Indy, it sort of shows the personality of a guy and something that I think a lot of teams would be drawn to. And so I think, you know, to me, all the tools are there. The processing is something that people have questioned. I don't really think that's that much of an issue. I think a lot of people read into what he did at the end of these seasons. And I think a big part of it is that you go back, you look at his offensive line, the way it was the end of the last 2 years. You also look at, the way that Carolina, the receivers really dropped off, I thought, towards the end of this season, especially once they lost Kobe Paceor. I thought Carolina didn't have really a threat in the slot, and not having that guy that can sort of create his own separation in short yarded situations, I think really hurt the Tar Heels. They had, Bryson Nesbitt had his injury issues, was on and off the field this year. Same thing with John Copenhaver, who we really thought was going to be a reliable target in the preseason. He ends up dealing with the hand issue early in the year. Never was really able to recover after that and become the type of player that we thought he was going to become in the Tar Heel passing game. And so it left a lot on Tez Walker. And Tez Walker, I think, thrives as a deep ball receiver. We've seen that. That's a big reason why a lot of people like him in this class. But, I mean, look, this is, you know, one of the things that we have to talk about when it comes to Tez Walker is that he is not a guy that in short yardage situations runs the crispest routes. He's not a guy that can create a lot of separation short. And that's one of the things that concerns a lot of people about him. And we'll talk about Tez here in a minute. But, you know, I think all those things you have to sort of take it into account when you talk about Drake May. But I don't really think that there is anybody in this class that has a stronger arm outside of maybe Joe Milton. And the thing with Joe Milton is, yeah, very strong arm, but not very accurate. I don't know if there's anybody that can quite create off of, you know, off a structure like May. I mean, I know we've seen moments from Caleb Williams, but Drake, I think, is a guy that when it comes to improvising, maybe better than anybody in this class and probably better than a lot of the guys that are currently in the NFL, he just creates things out of nothing. Some of the throws that he's able to make off his back foot, some of the throws that he made this year, I mean, the left-handed pass is one that you're going to see over and over again. It's just those instinctual things on top of the things that he's able to do when he has a clean pocket, when he's able to drive the ball in. And you look at the big-time throws that he's made, people questioning his downfield accuracy. That was something that Kurt Benkert, a former NFL quarterback who now does film breakdowns because he couldn't last in the league. I think when you look at it, I don't really question the deep ball accuracy because, I mean, he had the most big-time throws of anybody in college football the last 2 years by more than 20. So you're talking about a guy that constantly makes big play after big play. Yeah, there's some things that I think you do have to talk through with him and try to figure out why he was struggling towards the end of these seasons. But I really do think that a lot of it has to do with the supporting cast really fading towards the end of these seasons, mainly because there's not enough of a rotation. Honestly, guys simply weren't good enough on that offensive line to hold up for the entire season. And I think that's a big reason why you saw him struggle. But I think everything else that you saw from, you know, the rest of the both the 2022 season and the 2023 season shows you that this is a guy that is more than capable of thriving at the NFL level. And in terms of what he did at the combine, look, he didn't work out. We knew that was going to be the case. It's not really shocking. And at this point, I mean, you saw it this year. It feels like in past years, maybe the top two quarterbacks choose not to work out. Now, this year might be a little bit different because there is an expectation that it could be the top three picks in the NFL draft guaranteed, maybe even as we've seen here since the combine, possibly the top four quarterbacks off the board will go with the first four picks in the draft. So, I think this year might be a special occurrence, but I mean, to see the top three guys in the class go there, not throw, it makes sense for Drake not to go out there, work with receivers that he doesn't know, and instead wait and go through a script that he's going to know inside and out, work with receivers that he knows as well as anybody, and it'll allow him to thrive when he throws on his pro day. He went there, did some interviews, though. A lot of people, Ian Rappaport, Jordan Schultz of Bleacher Report, both reporting that a lot of the teams really liked what they heard from him. So, I mean, look, there's some talk. There are some people that think he could end up falling a little bit in this draft now because they just love J.J. McCarthy. I don't really see it with J.J. McCarthy. I don't think that you have the arm there from that Drake May has. I don't think you have the instinctual plays that Drake May makes from J.J. McCarthy. Don't get it wrong. I think J.J. McCarthy has his strengths too, a guy that's really good on third down. But I don't think that the tools and the intangibles that you see from Drake May are there for J.J. McCarthy. But hey, if he's a guy that's going to fall, maybe it lands him in a better situation. But I still think that there's a chance that if he interviews again with with the Bears, I think there's still a chance he could end up being the number one pick. I really do. They're of course going to bring him in for one of their top 30 visits. You know that they're going to probably bring Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels as well. I still think there's a possibility because I thought this going into the process that this would really be the area that Drake would shine. Yes, I think some of, you know, the on-field stuff, when he goes out there for his pro day, he will look really good there as well. But I really think the difference will be what he's able to do in those interview rooms. Look, I'm not saying that Caleb Williams won't interview well. I don't really know. He's a guy that, you know, from some of the stories that we've heard, we don't even really know what to believe at this point because some of those stories have been proven to not be true. I think that Drake is a guy, though, that carries himself incredibly well. He's very knowledgeable. He's very easy to talk to. You can see that just from some of the other interviews that people have done with him. I know it from talking to him in high school when he was a player. So he's definitely a guy that I think is going to do very well with those interviews. And it's why I think the Bears are still going to be considering him. And it's why I don't think that he will probably last past two or three. The other reports that we saw, I saw multiple people reporting this, was that a lot of people are saying that Jaden Daniels is the guy at number two. And it's a lot of the draft experts that are saying that. The reporting from some of the people around the combine, mostly the team reporters, is that that is really the thought of the NFL draft experts, the people that are telling you what they would do, not what the teams are thinking. A lot of people believe that the teams are very, very high on Drake May. A lot of people see him as the number two quarterback in this class, and it really isn't that close. It's not really that many teams that are looking at Jaden Daniels and saying he is our number two guy on the board. So a lot of people believe he will end up going to Washington. But look, there are other teams that are interested. You never really know. We saw last year a team trade up to number one to take Bryce Young. So, I mean, look, the New York Giants, who are supposedly very interested, Jordan Renan, who was on in New York on ESPN or 98.7 ESPN up there the other day, he said that the Giants really, really like Daniel Jones. So that's something that I think if you keep an eye on it, and the Giants, I mean, we know their situation with Daniel Jones. He's got a neck issue. On top of the fact that he's really struggled. So the injury on top of that, Giants are supposedly very interested in a quarterback. You wonder if they're that interested, a guy like Brian Daboll, who has done so many good things with quarterbacks in the past, if there is enough push from him, Joe Shane, the GM, do they potentially trade up? I think that'll be something that'll be very interesting to monitor, but I mean, it's kind of all over the board. I think there are so many teams that will be interested in Drake, and I don't think there is anything to worry about if you are a Tar Heel fan. Well, let's get to the guys that were actually on the field working out. And some of the, you know, the guys that also sat down, talked to some teams. Really, we didn't hear a whole lot about the teams that a lot of these other guys sat down with. I know there was some really good interest going in on Miles Murphy, and he was the guy that went first. We'll start with him. Miles, you know, went out there with the defensive linemen. You know, this is such a tough event for defensive linemen, especially interior guys. I mean, I don't think he really had a bad night for himself. He didn't run fast. He ran a 5.21. His 10-yard split wasn't great at a 1.82. That's probably one of the things that was a little more concerning, something that you could maybe take away if you're a team that's trying to differentiate between him and some of the other guys in that area on your draft board. But ultimately, I think he showed that he's a draftable prospect. I thought he moved pretty well, especially for a big man, changed his direction really well. Didn't really see a whole lot of power on the bags, which is something that they look for when they get into those stand-up bag drills. But other than that, I mean, look, when it comes to linemen, the thing that you're always going to be looking for more than anything is how do these guys perform at the Senior Bowl, at the East-West Shrine Game, whatever event they get invited to, because you actually have to go through legitimate practices. There are trench drills, all those kind of things. So when it comes to a guy like him, I didn't think he would really test all that well. This really didn't shock me. I think the most important part for him was the interviews. And, you know, heading in, there were a ton of teams that were interested in him. The Eagles, the Packers, I know, had been in there really since the East-West Shrine game. The Giants had been talking to him. The Commanders were involved there. So a lot of teams, especially the NFC East teams, that were interested in Miles Murphy as a guy, maybe as a later round pick, probably late day three selection. And I think he showed that he will be drafted. That's kind of what I took away from what you saw from him. Then you go to Cedric Gray. And, you know, again, the linebacking group, tough one to stand out in. This was a really, really freakish group that was out there. Peyton Wilson from NC State probably had the best night because of how well he ran, moved very well. You know, Jeremiah Trotter Jr. wasn't going to blow anybody away with the athletic testing numbers. But once he got into the on-field drills, he was moving very well, caught the ball extremely well, which was probably the area he stood out the most. And then Edgerrin Cooper, that's the guy that everybody likes the most in this class out of Texas A&M. Really athletic. Again, moved very well in the drills. And so I think those were the guys that everybody was kind of focused on and that really stood out. But I thought Cedric Gray, you know, really solid night for him. 4.64, very solid time. I think a lot of people were expecting, you know, could be a guy that ran a little bit faster. I think that's, you know, from hearing what a lot of people were expecting going in, I think that's pretty good for him. The thing that, you know, I saw that probably was what separated him from some of the other guys, didn't catch the ball great, which is a little shocking. I thought he would catch the ball a little bit better, being that he was a former wide receiver in high school. But at the same time, it's nothing that's too concerning to me. There were some other linebackers that also, you know, had pretty solid nights behind him that a lot of people like in those mid rounds. But I think he showed that in my mind, I think he'll probably be a late day two pick. I think he'll probably slide in somewhere in that third round. Someone will take a risk on him. And some of the teams that were interested, I know he said when he spoke to the media on Wednesday of last week, he said that the Pittsburgh Steelers were a team that he had already sat down with. The San Francisco 49ers were a team that were supposedly interested in sitting down with him, although there were conflicting reports as to whether or not that meeting actually happened. I saw a push, and I've seen that this is a team that's in the market for an inside linebacker, the Dallas Cowboys. That's one to keep an eye on. But this is a really talented group, and there are going to be a lot of teams that are going to be looking to invest in inside linebacker help because it's a position that not a lot of people are going to want to pay. When you can get the type of talent that you can in this class, this is a very deep group. And I think he fits in very well towards the top. I think he'll probably be the fourth, maybe the fifth linebacker off the board. But I think that he will land in a pretty good scenario for himself. And even if he does slide into day three, I think it's going to be very early. I think it really just depends on how much value people put on the position. In years past, this has been a position that you haven't seen a ton of guys get drafted at early. I would be absolutely stunned if a guy goes in the first round. If it is, it'll be Edgerrin Cooper, but I think that would be reaching. You'll probably have to wait to the second round. And even then, some people think it would be late second round. So it just depends on how quickly after the first guy goes off the board, you start to see some of the other guys go off. Or, you know, maybe there is a team that really just loves what they've seen from Cedric Gray, or he just interviews that well and someone potentially takes a risk on him. But I thought, you know, did a good job of shifting his weight very well. I thought he got in and out of breaks very smoothly. So there's a lot to like about him. He looked exactly the way that we thought he would look. And I think it pretty much solidified him as a really solid pick in that inside linebacker class. Then you get to the guy that really showed out. And needed to after what he did in the Senior Bowl. And that's Tez Walker. He was blazing fast, 4.36, which was a really good time for him. I think a lot of people knew he was going to run fast. 4.36, I don't know if people knew it would quite be that fast. But remember, when he came to Carolina, there was the tape of him running 23 miles an hour when he was at Kent State. And it showed up at times this year for Carolina. And look, the biggest thing that he did, yeah, he ran fast, but he caught the ball well. And I get it. It's against air. There's nobody that's – he didn't have to make any contested catches, which were a big part of the issue for him when he was at the Senior Bowl. That's something that he's still going to have to answer for. He's going to have to get ironed out at the next level. But I will say that there were some passes in Senior Bowl practice that were easy ones that it felt like he dropped. Even in the game, I thought there were ones. And granted, there were, you know, at times there were guys that were draped on him and he still, you know, should have caught the football. But there were times where there were easy passes that he was just dropping. And I thought this was the type of showing that he needed. He caught everything. There were a couple of difficult throws that he had to go down and get. And he showed that, look, that may have just been an off week for him. There was a lot of pressure, a lot of big names that were there. But still, I think it's a part of the reason why, you know, this was good for him. But more than likely in this wide receiver class, he's probably still going to be a third round pick. Now, I do think that with what he showed at the combine, the speed that he showed, I do think that there are teams towards the end of the second round that may say if they're looking for somebody like that, someone that can really take the top off the defense, a big time D threat. I do think that he could end up being you know, someone that teams are interested for that specific role. But I just don't know if teams will be willing to take a risk on him in round two. There's so many great wide receivers in this class. I mean, this was an extremely fast, you know, class in terms of the 40. Now, I mean, his 4.36 was fourth best, but there were a ton of guys that were right around him, guys that looked really, really good going through the drills in terms of the top speed that they got to, a couple of guys in the gauntlet getting over 20 miles per hour while catching the football. So, I mean, that's the thing. There's so much depth in this class. You do wonder how much that Senior Bowl performance did hurt him, but this is exactly what he needed to quiet all those concerns, because if he had gone here, ran a slower time than many expected, or God forbid he had gone here and dropped a lot of passes, this could have been really devastating for him. Probably would have dropped him into day three. Now, I find it hard-pressed to believe that he'll drop that far. I do think that there's a chance just because of how much depth there is in this class. There are some guys that, you know, behind him had really good performances in Indy. But to me, I think he did enough here to secure him as a day two pick. Someone will take a risk on him. It's just a matter of when in that third round. And so, look, I gave you my opinions of what I saw out there, where I think certain guys are going to go. And when we come back on this edition of the podcast, we will talk to Justin Mello, a draft expert from the Draft Network, really the biggest and best that they got over there right now. He's a guy that, I mean, I was going through their website the other day, and every single article that I came across, it was something from Justin Mello. So I said, I got to get this guy on. He was gracious enough to stop by with us, and you'll hear that here in just a second. But first, have to tell you about the team over at Autograph. Now, how can I not, guys? Look, do you want to get rewarded for listening to our show or reading our articles on the website? Well, the team at Autograph, co-founded by Tom Brady, is redefining the fan experience by letting users earn points for the acts of fandom that they take every day, like listening to this show. The Autograph fandom app gives you access to your favorite UNC content in all in one place and offers rewards like tickets, exclusive merchandise, and more. And by that, we mean tickets to the Duke game, guys. That's right. This Saturday, they gave them out today. They gave out tickets for $16. It was a two-pack of tickets. You paid $32 to go to Cameron Indoor Stadium to watch the Tar Heels. There are so many great ticket offers like this that are going to be coming your way throughout the year. Hoping they're going to be getting into it on the football side of things too once that season rolls around. But you know what I've heard, they don't have them yet. I know they, you know, at the time when they were talking to me, they did tell me that they were going to have NC State tickets, like they gave away Virginia Tech tickets, and of course these Duke tickets. But apparently they are potentially working on getting NCAA tournament tickets. There's a chance Carolina could be here in Charlotte, so maybe they could look into that. Also, very similar to what they did on the football side of things, they sent people to the Rose Bowl and the College Football Playoff National Championship game on the Michigan side of things when they launched the part of the app for Michigan fans. They want to do the same thing this year with the Final Four if Carolina is able to make it. So tons of great offers could be on the way here for you guys. So make sure that you stick around, check out our social medias at Heel Tough Blog, as well as my personal one at HTB Anthony. Whenever one of those offers comes out, I will make sure to put that out for you guys. The biggest thing is you got to head over to the Apple App Store, search for Autograph Fandom Rewarded, and download that app so that when these types of tickets are given away, you will have the app there. All you have to do is sign in, or all you'll have to do at that point is just click on the app, get in there, and unlock the ticket exchange or the ticket link, and it'll get you in the running for those tickets. Make sure you download it for free today. Just use the referral code HEALTUFF. The link and code are in our podcast description. All right, guys. Well, let's get to Justin Mello of the Draft Network. As I said, he stopped by with us the other day. I got a chance to sit down with him on Monday and talk to him about his thoughts on the NFL draft. Here's that interview with Justin now.
Hey, guys, welcome back into the Heel Tough Blog podcast. Anthony Pagnotta, your host here with you as always. And it's time to bring in a guest, a guy I've been looking forward to talking to all weekend about the NFL scouting combine and just about the draft stock of these guys overall, the four guys that participated out in Indy as we get closer and closer to them potentially having their dreams of getting drafted in the NFL come true. It is NFL draft expert for the Draft Network, Justin Mello, joining us here on the podcast. And Justin, how's it going, man? I know definitely a crazy week, especially how they're doing it now, where it's a full week event. They have all the stuff in prime time. So how was that week there in Indy?
Definitely a crazy week, but also very, very enjoyable. You know, I think these last couple of days, we've seen some of the best testing we've seen, right, in a very long time. This is an incredibly athletic class, and excited that the hay's in the barn, and we move forward here towards April in the 2024 NFL draft.
Well, one of the guys from the Tar Heel side of things that really impressed, speaking of just how athletic this class was Tez Walker. And it felt like he kind of needed this after what we saw from him at the Senior Bowl. So you look, 4.36 40. I thought he caught the ball well. What did you think of his performance out there at the combine?
Well, you took the words right out of my mouth, right? I mean, I think the Senior Bowl was not very kind to him, right? He struggled with route running, struggled to create separation, had a couple of focus drops as well. I actually had identified him as a guy that really needed to have a good combine, right, to sort of start swinging the pendulum back in the right direction. And he did it. I mean, you said it. He placed second among all receivers in the broad jump with an 11-foot-2 broad. Fourth in the 40 with a 4.36. I mean, that's an outstanding time at 6'1", 193 pounds. And he also leaped higher than a 40-inch vertical. It was 40 and a half officially, and that was fifth among all receivers. And I think you said it, everything else looked good as well. So big week for him as he kind of, you know, began the process of having scouts remember why they were so high on him initially.
Now, the thing is, you know, it's a good week for him, but I saw a lot of people that were still kind of pushing back just a little bit on the fact that, look, he was making these catches against air. He was really struggling to, you know, come down with contested catches. So ultimately, where do you think he sort of fits in this wide receiver class? Because as we know, this is about as talented of a wide receiver class and as deep of a class as we've seen in a long, long time.
Well, it's an extremely deep class. I think if I was a betting man, and I'm really not, but if I was, I'd probably place him in the mid to late third round right now. I just think there are too many questions, and it's too deep of a class for him to be going in the second round. I mean, you saw what the testing numbers were like for these guys. You know, Xavier Worthy might be a late first, early second, and you got others, Xavier Leggett, you know, guys like Brian Thomas Jr. And A.D. Mitchell, I think, solidified themselves as first-round picks. You're so many guys going to go in that 35 to 50 range in the second, and I don't think Kez Walker is quite in that conversation. You know, you got guys like Ricky Pearsall that look great out there. Roman Wilson looks really good out of Michigan. He had a great Senior Bowl. I think he's probably another second-round pick. When you get to Tez, it's about betting on the traits, right? I think it's obvious there's some development here that still has to occur. He's not going to be a very crisp route runner as a rookie. I think the details are still something that he's getting used to, and it sort of escaped him a little bit right now. So, but the traits are worth betting on. That was very obvious there in Indianapolis. You're talking about a big-bodied, you know, vertical receiver that can really scoot, you know, for his size. So I think someone will bet on the traits around the third round, but I don't think he gets in any earlier than that.
All right, what about another day two guy, or at least that's where I see a lot of people sort of talking about him, Cedric Gray. You know, I watched him, and I thought he looked solid. I thought he did, you know, everything that he had to do. But I think a lot of Tar Heel fans, they probably looked around, saw what some of the other linebackers in that class were doing, and hearing the way that, you know, some of the guys on the NFL Network were talking about him. You know, what do you think about Cedric Gray? Is he a guy that, you know, you still see as maybe a day three pick?
Oh, he's definitely, I would probably go early day three if I had to guess right
gotcha.
Now. Fourth round is where I'd place him. Well, he had a good combine. You know, the 40 result was very, very good at 4.64. Unofficially, I believe the 10-yard split was a 1.59. Leaped a good vertical at 35.5. The broad was more than acceptable, 10 feet flat. I thought he had a good day. You know, arm length, too, is solid, 32.5 inches. He's a guy that triggers downhill violently on tape. He's a good football player. This is a really cluttered class at linebacker. I don't know. I think Jared Cooper is probably the best one. You got guys like Junior Colson and Jeremiah Trotter Jr., are in that, you know, day two conversation. I think when you get to day three, again, there are so many guys. Tyrese Knight out of UTEP looks pretty good. Curtis Jacobs from Penn State, I thought, looked like a good coverage backer. Cedric Gray's potentially got three down ability, right? I think that's what maybe sets him aside from a couple of those other guys. He's a good athlete. I think he reads the game well. You know, when you comb through his tape, he identifies pre-snap well, triggers violently downhill. So I think he's still an early day three guy. Part of that's also the not exactly a premium position, right? And there are a lot of them sort of in that early day three mix, but certainly Gray's a guy that I think has terrific upside.
Well, you know, one of the other things that you do, and the reason that I was able to actually find you, reach out to you, was the interviews that you do with these players. And one of the guys that you sat down right before the combine with was Miles Murphy. What did you think of his performance out there? And there seems to be, you know, a pretty good amount of interest for him, which is good considering that when he initially made his decision to go to the NFL, you know, I was kind of wondering because he wasn't the most productive at the college level, but it seems like there is some general interest on him.
Right, and I think some of that comes from the Shrine Bowl. You know, he had a really good Shrine Bowl by all accounts. Everyone I've spoken with, NFL scouts, directors out there that run the Shrine, they were all very impressed with him, right? And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there. The production, it does leave some to be desired, right? I think he leaves school with only like 4.5 or 5 sacks to his name. That's a big question mark, right? He's been a run stopper more than anything else. Well, when you looked at Shrine, he did really well for himself in the pass rushing drills. He dominated one-on-ones at time. I think that's where he made his money because that was the biggest question going in. Is this guy just a two-down run stopper, or does he have more juice when it comes to rushing the passer than he showed us on tape? And I thought he answered that question a bit at the Shrine. Like the combine, look, this guy's more of a football player. I don't think the combine's a great environment for him and his skill set. The 40, it wasn't very good. We know it was like a 5.21. Mm-hmm. The broad was okay, you know, 8'10". The vertical, you know, not very good at 28.5. But he's a big boy, you know, 6'04", 309 pounds. And that weight, he probably got that down a little, right, to run. I think at Trine, he was like 315. So he got that down a little, probably to run even a five in the 5.2s. But I think he's a better football player than he is athlete. The Shrine to me was more telling than the combine. He looked really, really good in one-on-ones. The production does leave some to be desired, but I do think he's a draftable player. And what you saw there on tape at Shrine, very, very promising. I do think he ends up getting drafted here at the back half of the draft.
All right, well, we've waited long enough. We got to talk about the guy that headlines this class. For the Tar Heels.
Guy?
Yeah,
there,
believe it or not,
okay.
There is. I know people are a little shocked because you didn't see him out there going through the drills. But boy, Justin, we heard him talking, man. This dude loves to chat. One of really just the most respectful dudes. I mean, calls everybody sir, ma'am. And he was carving it up, talking to everybody from the media to, of course, teams. And I'll tell you what, I know it's hard for people to believe because how much can you really tell based on just sitting down with someone, but it's really the most important thing that teams do when they're out there. And according to some of the reports, man, Drake May had himself a good week. You know, do you think there is any chance that the Chicago Bears are still possibly considering him at one? Did he do enough while he was out there to at least give them a thought of that in the back of their mind?
Well, you know, almost 2 months out still, and maybe I'm naive, but I would say the Bears probably haven't made a decision with conviction at this point. They still got a month and a half to go through this process. They're going to bring all these guys into their facility, right, for top 30 visits. So things can change. But I do expect them to take Caleb Williams. Mm-hmm. I'd be pretty shocked if they did. I think the real question right now, or the better question, so to speak, is whether it's Drake May or Jaden Daniels at number two for the Washington Commanders. That's something, a topic of conversation that's emerged more than I thought it would, in all honesty. But as I've done my research around the league, speaking with, you know, scouts and teams and some decision makers, I don't think there are a ton of teams, from what I'm hearing, that have Jaden Daniels ranked ahead of Drake May, excuse me. I think it's only a handful of them. So if I was a betting man, I'd feel pretty comfortable going with Drake May at number two overall.
Talking to Justin Mello, NFL and NFL draft expert for the Draft Network. Last question for you, Justin. When you look at Drake May, and I've heard a lot of people that kind of differ on where they think he is in terms of a pro-ready prospect, I've heard some sort of say he reminds them a little bit of Jordan Love, and that if he could get a situation like that, that might be what's best for him. Ultimately, when you look at some of the landing spots towards the top of the draft, or maybe some teams that could trade up from the middle of that first round, where do you think would be the best type of fit for him? Is there a couple of spots that maybe stick out to you?
Well, unfortunately, when you're as good of a quarterback as Drake May is, the teams that are in contention to pick you at the top typically aren't very, very good, right? That's the way things go. I look at the likeliest landing spot, the Washington Commanders. Mm-hmm. At least you got a couple receivers you're inheriting there, right, with Jahan Dotson and Terry McLaurin. You've got a pretty good running back in Brian Robinson Jr. I think they'll add another back. But there are a lot of pieces that still need to be put in place there, right? The offensive line was a mess this past year. Sam Howell was sacked at like nearly a record-breaking pace. You know, Drake will be able to offset some of that stuff if that's where he lands, I think, with his legs. He's a very good athlete. But there are still a lot of pieces in place that need to be added there in Washington. It's the same with some of the other landing spots, right? The New England Patriots have massive holes and questions all over their roster. The New York Giants at number six, again, I don't think he'd last that long, but if they trade up, the Vegas Raiders are around there. All these teams have massive questions and holes. That's just the way it is, right, when you're a high-end quarterback prospect. When Joe Burrow went to the Bengals, they had a bunch of questions. Trevor Lawrence and the Jacksonville Jaguars, you've seen how quickly those teams have turned it around right after drafting those quarterbacks. Something similar could happen for Drake May, right? But the truth is the truth. There's a lot that needs to be done with the likeliest landing spots for him. Some of the better ones, you know, again, I think they're too far down that list. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the Atlanta Falcons at number eight, I think, are a great spot. The weapons are obviously in place with Bijan and Drake London and Kyle Pitts. A little, again, probably too far down the list, but the Denver Broncos and Minnesota Vikings, two other teams that are rumored to try to get aggressive to make a move up for a quarterback. Certainly you'd love Drake to land with Sean Payton there in Denver. And then Minnesota, I mean, I think that would be the number one spot, right? I mean, talk about inheriting the best receiver in football in Justin Jefferson, an outstanding receiver too in Jordan Addison. I was thinking ahead. And then a premium tight end in TJ Hawkinson, right? I mean, that would be the best landing spot for any quarterback in this class. But I think Drake May's way too good to fall that far, and I don't know that the Vikings and Broncos will have the capital to come up high enough to come get him.
Yeah, those are two of the spots I've kind of looked at, too. Also, there is the personal side of it for me. I am a Giants fan, so I'd love to see him be in New York with the Giants. But I think the thing that's best about him, he seems like he's up to it. He's ready to handle whatever place he ends up landing. Hey, Justin, thanks so much, man. This was fantastic. Really enjoyed talking to you about our guys that were out there. I thought it was a pretty good week overall for all the guys, and really appreciate you taking some time out to come on and talk to him with us.
Pleasure was all mine. Now you know where to find me.
All right, Justin. Thanks so much, man.
Well, there we go. I might actually want to turn my mic on. There you go, guys. Justin Mello of the Draft Network. Fantastic stuff. He was awesome. And again, go check out his content on the Draft Network. Check him out on social media. Justin M. Hold on. I just had it here just a second ago. Justin M underscore NFL. Is where you can check him out on Twitter. He does a tremendous job, one of the best in the draft industry right now at covering it. And, just a ton of great stuff there. Disagree with them a little bit in certain areas as to where I see certain guys going. But, for the most part, I think, you know, we're in lockstep. And you got to love, as I said there, a lot of compliments for Drake May. So people, you know, all over the board on him, but I think the majority of people, it feels like, are looking at him as a guy that's going to go somewhere in the top three picks. It's just a matter of where. All right, guys, let's turn to the recruiting trail real quick here in the 2025 class. And we have to because there was a big target for the Tar Heels, arguably their top target in this class. If you just go off of the rankings in the state of North Carolina, when you have the number one player in the state, also the number two player in the country, in your state, I think it's pretty obvious that he is the number one guy or should be the number one guy when it comes to the Tar Heels big board for this season in terms of guys they want. And now that board's going to shift a little bit because David Sanders, the five-star offensive tackle from Providence Day High School in Charlotte, North Carolina, he announced his top six last week. Actually did it on Saturday. And Carolina, not one of the six teams that are still remaining for him. Now, I got to be honest. This is kind of shocking to me. And honestly, it's not a great sign for Carolina. It's not a great look for you in terms of in-state recruiting. This is something that, I mean, in years past here under Mack Brown, since his return, Carolina, I get it. Maybe Carolina wouldn't be the favorite, but Carolina was at least around in these battles. I mean, you go back even with his teammates that he played with at Providence Day this past year, Jaden Daniels, still stuck in the draft mode. Jaden Davis, you know, Carolina was in that one to the end. It was that, you know, they were in second place. And granted, Michigan, I think, held a pretty solid lead for most of that race. But Carolina was the second team there. Channing Goodwin, another teammate that he played with this past year. Carolina was right there. Goodwin's was a three-star prospect. But, I mean, Jaden Davis was a five-star prospect. You look at some of the other guys. I mean, Travis Shaw, Carolina lands him. Dez Evans, Carolina lands him. Guys that were top players in the state during their time. For Carolina to not even be in the race when he cuts it down to six, that's a tough – I mean, that's a tough look. Tough look for Randy Clements, the offensive line coach. who, I mean, look, there are people already out on Randy Clements. My thing is you got to give him a little bit of time. He had guys that he was working with this year that were on their third offensive line coach in as many years. So the shifting of schemes, it sometimes will take guys a little bit of time to adjust. You also wanted to give him a little bit of time to get guys that fit his scheme a little bit better in there. And you're hoping that this offseason has allowed him to do that through the transfer portal. Although, you know, the group that Carolina's brought in on the offensive line, there's question marks about that in terms of who's going to be able to actually make a major contribution for Carolina this year. But, I mean, this is concerning for Mac Brown and the direction of the program, because you wonder as we go along here, and I mean, you heard it with Bryce Davis, Carolina's back in that race, and you know, that's a good thing. That's a credit to Mac Brown there. They did a lot of work. Ted Monachino came in immediately. It seems like made Bryce Davis one of his priorities, but I mean, for David Sanders to not even be considering you. And the thing that's amazing to me is he's not considering you after midseason. He took a visit to Chapel Hill for the game against Miami, and he was raving about the campus. He was raving about the team, and things were feeling good at that time. But it shows you that the results that Carolina has had towards the end of the last couple of seasons, the way they've collapsed at the end of both years, is starting to have an effect. And, you know, we talk about, you know, what type of effect it has just on the direction of the program overall, in terms of, you know, their perception nationally. Well, it's starting to show up here. This is where it's going to start to show up, is in high school recruiting, because Carolina values that more than they value the transfer portal. They've told us that. You know, Patrick Sudis, when he talked to the media, he told you that right out. That's what we value right now. And he's basically, at this point, you know, in the world of modern college athletics, his role is basically what the GM's role is in the NFL. And so they value high school recruiting. Well, this is an area where, you know, they're showing already that they are taking a little bit of a step back. You know, this is one that, look, ultimately, was Carolina probably going to end up landing him? No. So maybe it isn't that devastating, but it is a little concerning that you can't even crack the final six schools for a guy that at a time you would have thought Carolina was at least one of the top three or four schools for him. So yeah, I mean, NIL, I think, plays a big role here too. I think that's why it's so important, and it's why you're seeing Mac Brown make a push to Tar Heel fans that you need to invest in NIL more than anything that the program asked for, that the athletic department asked for. NIL is probably the most important thing right now on the football side of things. You want to field a competitive team in modern college football, then you probably have to be willing to spend a significant amount of money. And I know Tar Heel fans have been bothered by that notion, but this is another instance of that. You'll see it. You'll see it probably later on. There will be reports that will come out that NIL played a huge role in where David Sanders ultimately ends up. But, I mean, we saw it, man. Mac Brown said, you know, Carolina, when they raised the $1 million that they were hoping for through the Heels for Life campaign, he said that this is just the start. We need $5 million to be able to field a competitive roster. And that's the point that college football is at. I hate it. Trust me. I wish at this point, I know they're not going backwards. I'm with Mac Brown. He said it earlier this offseason, just start paying guys. But it's a part of it. So all that together culminates in Carolina missing out on the top player in the state of North Carolina. But the good news is Carolina, you know, they've gotten some guys here recently that have made their declarations as to when they will be on campus for official visits. There are a ton of names. We've got articles up on the website for you guys to check out. But the most significant ones, as I mentioned, Bryce Davis, one of the biggest guys in the state of North Carolina, depending on what site you go by, either the second or third ranked player in the state in this class, ranked inside the top 100 according to 24/7 Sports composite rankings. out of Grimsley High School, you know, school, of course, that Carolina has had success recruiting out of. So this is a guy that Carolina now can really push all their chips into the middle of the table on and say, I mean, they can honestly tell them, and I'm assuming that they have, you are our top priority in this class now. There is no question that you are the guy that we feel like we have to get in this class. If Carolina can get him, I feel like that would sort of quiet some of the concerns just a little bit. Because, I mean, even, you know, you look at David Sanders, the good news is that it's all out-of-state schools that are involved with him. Clemson is the favorite. Georgia's the team that's, you know, a little off the pace. Alabama's in there. It's the typical powers that you would expect for the number two overall prospect. With Bryce Davis, yeah, Clemson's there. NC State's also going to be involved. It's these local schools, and you know, especially if State gets more involved, it's an in-state school that's really going to show whether or not you are still the team that is recruiting at the highest level in your state. This past year, I mean, look, you know, State had a very solid class. It seems like their focus is more on the transfer portal than high school recruiting. And that's the thing. You're going to see that more and more as we move forward throughout college football, where some teams are focused on high school, trying to build that way. Other teams are going to be focused on trying to build through the transfer portal, so that maybe Carolina will still hold an advantage with the high school guys because State won't make it a priority. But you still feel like Carolina's shield around the Carolinas did get chipped out a little bit, and that the national teams, even more so than in years past, are starting to invade. So it's important for Carolina to be able to lock up Bryce Davis. The other significant guy that has confirmed he'll be on campus in the month of June is the number two safety in the class, according to 24/7 Sports, in Kanoa Winston out of Washington, D.C., Gonzaga High School, one of the national powers. So again, this is a national recruitment. Now, Carolina, they position themselves pretty well here. He was on campus for the basketball game against Duke back in early February. And it seems like he really likes what he's seen from Carolina. He's been here multiple times. Now he schedules the official visit. It really feels like Carolina, led by a push from Charlton Warren, is going to be in this one to the end. And I think they were probably the biggest threat right now to Penn State. Now, the thing is that this is an area Penn State recruits very, very well, Washington, D.C. So Carolina's got their work cut out for them. There's no doubt about that. But this is, you know, Carolina has recruited out of Maryland before. They did a really good job of that at times under Larry Fedora. They, you know, of course, have recruited Virginia well under Mack Brown. And so it feels like this is part of that push as they try to get further north. This is a tough one, but if Carolina can find a way to lock this one up, that would be huge. And again, it's going to take a lot because Penn State, I feel like, is in the driver's seat right now. But just to be able to get him on campus, to be one of the top competitors for him, it shows that, look, Carolina, they want to take care of the home state. They need to take care of the home state because, as we talked about, when you go back to what really led to the demise of Larry Fedora in Chapel Hill, it was the fact that guys in the state of North Carolina were just no longer responding to him, and he simply could not land the best talent in his home state. Carolina, though, is showing you that they're expanding their footprint from what it has been before. You know, even early in the Mack Brown era, it was North Carolina, you know, Virginia were the top two states. Georgia was a state that Carolina would dip into as well. And then outside of that, that was really it. But now you're starting to see Carolina really strengthen that pipeline in Georgia, hitting that state incredibly hard, almost just as hard as they're hitting the state of North Carolina. You're seeing them, you know, talk to some guys in the state of South Carolina, trying to go down there and take guys out of that state. You're seeing them go into the state of Florida a little more often in terms of their offers, which was expected when you got Charlton Warren back in there and some of the other guys that you've added to the staff. And now you're seeing them go into Maryland again and into that Washington, D.C. area. Not to mention, they've also started going a little bit west. You've seen a lot of offers being handed out in the state of Tennessee. So Carolina is really starting to expand that footprint. And it's something that's important with the way that Carolina is going to want to continue to load this roster up with high school prospects moving forward, as opposed to leaning on the transfer portal like other schools. So make sure, as I said, go check out all those articles on the website. We're keeping you up to date on all the guys that are setting official visits. You got that article on David Sanders on the website. Read a little bit more in depth on that situation and my take on what exactly happened there to Carolina and why they are no longer in the race for him. And then, of course, all the NFL Combine stuff is on the website as well. We'll, of course, before Pro Day, update, you know, we did the pre-draft rankings where, you know, big boards had them, where some of the mock drafts will have them. We'll do the same thing when we get to the Pro Day to sort of set the tone for that one. Again, 11 Tar Heels are expected to work out in that Pro Day. And that's just the guys that were on the roster this year. You always see occasionally there's a guy or two that comes back that's still trying to make, you know, a career out of football that may come back and work out as well. So it's going to be a packed Pro Day. We'll have you covered on all of that. And, of course, right around the corner here is spring football. So we are going to have you up to date on all of the important storylines, all the best battles in camp, all that stuff. I'll have for you on the website at HeelToughBlog.com. And with camp getting ready to return, you know that means Mac Brown will be speaking a lot. So those press conference takeaways will be returning. That'll be huge to hear from the head coach about where things are at and what is, you know, an important year for him and this Carolina coaching staff. Got to find a way to end the issues that they've had towards the end of the season, you know, in terms of closing games out, closing the season out strong. And now they got to do it with a bunch of new faces. So it's going to be really interesting. Ton of great battles that we'll be keeping an eye on starting in spring and then eventually heading over into fall camp. And you can check it all out on the website. Of course, basketball side of things, man, it is really heating up, guys. Carolina gets ready for the regular season finale against the Duke Blue Devils on the road on Saturday. Me and Josh have you covered on that one. We'll have the live edition of the podcast tomorrow night, same place that you're watching right now. You can watch tomorrow night. You do not want to miss that as Carolina is looking to win the outright ACC championship game, get that number one seed in Washington, D.C., coming up next week. That would be huge for them. And then, of course, the NCAA tournament. It's the first time, guys, that in a while that we're going to get to cover Carolina in the NCAA tournament as a one seed or a two seed, a really high seed is probably what I should have said there instead of leading you down that path of a possible one seed. But, I mean, look, Carolina is going to be a really high seed. It's going to be really exciting to go through, break down their bracket, all that great stuff. And we're going to have that for you on the Four Corners podcast as well as the website where Josh will have you covered with all the game previews, game recaps, all that great stuff as we hit the most important time of the year for Carolina basketball as they're hoping to win their eighth national championship. So that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the podcast. I want to thank all you guys who jumped on and were watching tonight. I want to thank those that'll go back and listen later on. But for now, Anthony Pagnotta stepping away saying so long, and as always, go Tar Heels!